Hi, this is Scott Sicherer, Deputy Editor of the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology and Practice, and I'm excited to present the highlights of our September 2022 theme issue. And the theme is Microbiome and Clinical Allergy Immunology. We want to thank Wanda Fipitonicol and Erica von Mutius for coordinating this fantastic theme issue and contributing a theme editorial entitled The Microbiome in Clinical Allergy and Immunology, Emerging Role as Friend and Foe, that contextualizes the review articles in this issue and the field in general. We have four review articles in this issue. The first is entitled The Microbiome as Gateway to Prevention of Allergic Disease Development, and that comes with CME. The next is The Environmental Microbiome, Allergic Disease and Asthma, which also comes with CME. A clinical management review entitled Current Use of Probiotics and Prebiotics in Allergy, also with CME. And also a clinical commentary review entitled Microbiome-Immune Interactions in Allergy and Asthma. Additional special articles in this issue include a Grand Rounds review entitled Adverse Events and Safety of SARS-CoV-2 Vaccines, What's New and What's Next, a Rostra article entitled SARS-CoV-2 Omicron, Light at the End of the Long Pandemic Tunnel or Another False Dawn for Immunodeficient Patients, and a Rostra entitled Acute At-Home Management of Anaphylaxis, 911, What is the Emergency? Now I will present the summaries of the full-length original articles in this issue. These will cover the following areas in formation: anaphylaxis, asthma, eosinophilic disorders, dermatitis, food allergy, hypersensitivity pneumonitis, mast cell disorders, and rhinitis and sinusitis. Our first article is Short-Acting Beta-2 Agonist Exposure and Severe Asthma Exacerbations, Sabina Findings from Europe and North America by Quint et al. What's already known about this topic? Although the Global Initiative for Asthma no longer recommends short-acting beta-2 agonists, SABA, without concomitant inhaled corticosteroids for patients with asthma aged 12 years and older, U.S. guidelines only partially address this concept and continue to recommend SABA-only treatment for intermittent asthma. What does this article add to our knowledge? Independent of maintenance therapy, increasing SABA exposure leaves patients across North America and Europe at risk of severe exacerbations. In the United States, SABA monotherapy-treated patients represent the most patients, with over half experiencing one or more annual severe exacerbations. How does the study impact current management guidelines? The findings indicate possible undertreatment of patients with asthma and highlight potential gaps in U.S. guidelines. As addressed by the Global Initiative for Asthma, our findings underscore the need for symptom-based use of an inhaled corticosteroid with a fast-acting bronchodilator as a rescue reliever to potentially mitigate the occurrence of severe exacerbations across all asthma severities. The next article is entitled Perceptions on Home Administration of Biologics in the Context of Severe Asthma, an International Qualitative Study by Flockstra de Block et al. What is already known about this topic? Patient and healthcare provider perceptions about home-administered biologics have been reported in other diseases but are limited in severe asthma, e.g., single-country, single-type of biologic. What does this article add to our knowledge? International insight on the perceptions and experiences of patients and healthcare providers regarding home administration of biologics and the treatment of severe asthma, including all types of home-administered biologics that are currently available. How does this study impact current management guidelines? To reduce the patient journey from severe asthma onset to biologics prescription, awareness of biologics should increase. Guided practice, accessible contact, and monitoring, social support should be central in the transition from hospital to home administration. The next article is entitled Asthma is Associated with Pregnancy Loss and Recurrent Pregnancy Loss, a Nationwide Cohort Study by Tinemedzin et al. What's already known about the topic? The literature is divided regarding the risk of pregnancy loss in women with asthma. Also, data only report on single pregnancy loss. What does the article add to our knowledge? Early onset asthma and uncontrolled asthma in women are associated with multiple pregnancy losses. Also, recurrent pregnancy loss is associated with asthma. How does the study impact current management guidelines? Overuse of short-acting beta agonist or uncontrolled asthma is a risk factor for pregnancy loss in women with asthma. These women should be closely monitored. Next, we have effectiveness of interventions targeting treatable traits for the management of obstructive airway diseases, a systematic review and meta-analysis by Sarwar et al. What's already known about the topic? Treatable traits are a new proposed paradigm for the management of obstructive airway diseases, OADs. This approach relies on precision medicine model where treatment is targeted at biological, psychosocial, or clinical phenotype characteristics. What does the article add to our knowledge? Multidimensional assessment of pulmonary and extrapulmonary treatable traits and behavioral risk factors followed by targeted intervention is highly effective in improving health outcomes for people with OADs. How does the study impact current management guidelines? The study provides the much-needed data to support the new treatment paradigm based on treatable traits and highlights potential benefits from its implementation in clinical practice. The next article is entitled Occupational Asthma Caused by Low Molecular Weight Chemicals Associated with Contact Dermatitis, a Retrospective Study by Tsui et al. What's already known about the topic? The clinical patterns and preceding or co-occurring symptoms associated with different etiological agents are not well defined in patients diagnosed with occupational asthma. What does the article add to our knowledge? Patients with occupational asthma exposed to low molecular weight agents are likely to have or had contact dermatitis, which is associated with specific job types or agents, including construction, hairdressing, metals, or epoxy resins. How does the study impact current management guidelines? For workers exposed to specific agents, contact dermatitis may be a hint of sensitization. In patients with occupational asthma, the co-occurrence of contact dermatitis may strengthen the plausibility of occupational asthma, and it does help in finding and attributing the cause. The next article is entitled Factors Related to Biologic Adherence and Outcomes Among Moderate to Severe Asthma Patients by Osezua Peters et al. What's already known about the topic? Asthma biologic adherence rates appear to be relatively high among patients with moderate to severe asthma. What does the article add to our knowledge? Asthma biologic adherence varies with administration setting, with lowest rates in the clinic setting, whereas racial and ethnic as well as insurance-related disparities were apparent among patients who self-administer. What does the study impact current management guidelines? Biologic adherence may be improved through specialist access before initiation of therapy and allowing for self-administration when feasible. The next article is entitled Mepolizumab Reduces Hypereosinophilic Syndrome Flares Irrespective of Blood Eosinophil Count and Interleukin-5 by Rothenberg et al. What is already known about this topic? Mepolizumab is the first biologic therapy to be approved for the treatment of hypereosinophilic syndrome, HES. Previous studies demonstrated that mepolizumab reduced disease flares and improved fatigue severity versus placebo in patients with HES. What does this article add to our knowledge? Our analysis shows that mepolizumab is associated with reduction in disease flares and fatigue severity irrespective of baseline blood eosinophil count, and also showed efficacy in patients with an undetectable serum interleukin-5 level. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Patients with HES are likely to achieve clinical benefit with mepolizumab treatment independent of baseline blood eosinophil count. Patients should be considered for mepolizumab treatment irrespective of detectable serum interleukin-5 levels. The next article is entitled, Dupilumab Improves Clinical Scores in Children and Adolescents with Moderate to Severe Atopic Dermatitis, a Real-World Single-Center Study by Pagan et al. What's already known about this topic? Dupilumab has demonstrated safety and efficacy in children and adolescents with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, AD, in clinical trials and some limited real-world studies. However, additional comprehensive studies in the pediatric population are still needed. What does this article add to our knowledge? Our results further support the safety and effectiveness of dupilumab in the treatment of pediatric and adolescent moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, regardless of age, sex, race, or ethnicity. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Our study expands knowledge about dupilumab outcomes, including an observed reduction in concomitant AD treatment and a significant association between history of ATP and greater improvement in body surface area after treatment. The next article is entitled PINA Oral Immunotherapy with or without H1 and H2 antihistamine premedication for peanut allergy, Pisces, a placebo-controlled randomized clinical trial by Chu et al. What's already known about the topic? Peanut allergy is a growing global problem, but current forms of treatment using oral immunotherapy, OIT, are associated with side effects, and there's a lack of evidence addressing how to mitigate them. What does this article add to our knowledge? H1 and H2 antihistamines added to peanut OIT modestly reduce the skin and gastrointestinal components of the high incidence of OIT-induced adverse reactions, and there's no clear difference in quality of life improvement whether treated with peanut OIT or with placebo OIT. How does the study impact current management guidelines? Antihistamines are a low-cost option to add to OIT, but adding them to an already complex OIT regimen must be balanced against their modest benefits and added adverse effects. Safer food allergy treatments that importantly improve patient and family quality of life need to be proven in future randomized controlled trials. The next article is entitled, Food Protein-Induced Enterocolitis Syndrome in Adulthood, Clinical Characteristics, Prognosis, and Risk Factors by Gonzalez Delgado et al. What's already known about this topic? Food protein-induced enterocolitis syndrome, FPIES, is increasingly recognized in adults with a predominance in women. Differences in clinical manifestations, trigger foods, and prognosis compared with pediatric FPIES have been reported. What does this article add to our knowledge? Abdominal pain is the most common symptom, whereas vomiting is absent in some cases. Remission may be observed in some patients. A higher prevalence of comorbid gastrointestinal pathologies was observed compared with the general population. How does the study impact current management guidelines? Clinical differences compared with pediatric FPIES would support a revision of diagnostic criteria in adults. Oral food challenges are essential in the multiple food FPIES phenotype to rule out other gastrointestinal entities, such as irritable bowel disease, and to evaluate for tolerance. The next article is entitled, Effects of Exercise and Sleep Deprivation on Reaction Severity During Oral Peanut Challenges, a Randomized Controlled Trial by Dwight Hall. What's already known about the topic? There are limited data on the effect of cofactors or repeat challenges on allergic reaction severity. What does the article add to our knowledge? This is the first study showing that both sleep deprivation and repeated challenges increased the severity of peanut allergic reaction in adults by 48% and 38% respectively using a weighted severity score. Exercise does not significantly increase severity. How does the study impact current management guidelines? Knowing how these factors modulate severity can better allow healthcare professionals to advise patients about their future reaction risk and facilitate the avoidance of a severe reaction, for example, when advising about cofactors during immunotherapy. The next article is entitled, Why Kale-40 and Kale-6 Levels in Serum and Sputum of Patients Diagnosed with Hypersensitivity Pneumonitis by Sanchez-Diaz et al. What's already known about the topic? Hypersensitivity pneumonitis cases may be underdiagnosed and may in fact represent up to 43% of the interstitial lung diseases classified as idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. What does this article add to our knowledge? Chitinase 3-like 1, YKL-40, and Krebs von den Lungren 6, KL-6, proteins seem to be capable of distinguishing patients with hypersensitivity pneumonitis from healthy individuals and patients with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis with adequate sensitivity and specificity. YKL-40 had sensitivity greater than 74%, specificity greater than 53%, and KL-6 had sensitivity greater than 70% and specificity greater than 52%, thus confirming their potential role as biomarkers. KL-6 may be a predictor of disease progression. How does the study impact current management guidelines? Measurement of YKL-40 and KL-6 levels in patients with hypersensitivity pneumonitis offers insights into the pathobiology of this disease and has the potential to improve diagnostic accuracy. The next article is entitled, Elevated Basal Serum Tryptase, Disease Distribution and Variability in a Regional Health System by Waters et al. What's already known about this topic? Tryptase is a biomarker linked to mast cell number and degranulation. Several disorders have been associated with elevated basal tryptase and a transient increase in tryptase is associated with anaphylaxis. What does this article add to our knowledge? Hereditary alpha-tryptosemia is the most common cause for elevated basal serum tryptase, BST, in a regional health system, and myeloid neoplasms and chronic kidney disease are the common acquired causes. BST variability exceeded the 20% plus 2 formula in 41.5% of subjects with elevated BST, suggesting that this formula lacks specificity among these individuals. How does the study impact current management guidelines? An algorithm starting with tryptase genotyping, kidney function, complete blood count and differential, KIT, PDB16V of blood, and 24-hour N-methylhistamine helps guide the differential diagnosis when evaluating individuals with elevated BST. The next and final article is entitled Management of United Airway Disease Focused on Patients with Asthma and Chronic Rhinosinusitis with Nasal Polyps, a Systematic Review by Malal et al. What's already known about the topic? United Airway Disease, UAD, describes the coexistence of upper and lower airway disease as a single entity based on common pathophysiological characteristics, as occurs for asthma and chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps. What does the article add to our knowledge? The study summarizes publications reporting data on the management of patients with UAD. Underlying type 2 inflammation can be effectively controlled by biologic therapies, which impact both asthma and sinonasal outcomes. These agents have enabled a reduction in systemic corticosteroid dosing, as well as the need for endoscopic sinus surgery. Several identified gaps would require further research. How does the study impact current management guidelines? Although most common treatment algorithms and criteria for the indication of biologics consider asthma and chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps as separate entities, the paradigm change toward a common algorithm and a more integrative approach for the management of a UAD is warranted. We also point the reader to the multiple additional brief articles, clinical communications, and other features in this theme issue. This is Scott Sicherer. Thank you for listening to this Highlights podcast for the theme issue on microbiome and clinical allergy immunology. I hope you enjoyed hearing these article highlights, and I encourage you to read through the theme issue, as the editors are confident that the information is valuable to you and your patients. Thank you very much for listening.